registrations, and more. You can learn more at yourtribe.org. Stay tuned. Coming up next is Thursday Night Talk.
Good evening. This is Eric Kirk, Thursday Night Talk. I am alone in the studio, in Studio B tonight. I have Katie with me engineering, but I have no guests tonight. I'm going to do a little bit of editorializing. Those of you who've heard the promos or read them, I'm talking tonight about whether or not class politics in the United States are dead. Or dying, or in the OR. Once upon a time, progressives, represented the working class. The working class was actually considered, according to the progressive ideologies, the vanguard, the force that the social force that would lead to revolution or great changes. It was seen as a source of innovation, because once the working class actually had some time, some free time, things started to get invented. Artisans developed, a couple hundreds years ago. Science expanded, the working class was considered progressive, not regressive. And I think that the left-wing movements, as we call them, the socialist movements, liberals, everybody in between, have evolved their position as some of the structural realities of the social construct of the United States has evolved. And to put that in simple terms, the left has lost the working class. Particularly the white working class, but is losing the working class steadily. I want to talk about it because I'm somebody who is active in these issues. And although on the station I can't talk about who I'm going to vote for or when, I can't endorse any candidates, but I can editorialize a little bit about where I think people are going in a good direction and a bad direction. And I think that what we do have to address what are referred to as left coast politics. We're talking a lot of talk about CalExit, about California leaving the union. And it's true that Texas and Alaska have talked about it for a long time. They have their secessionist movements, but they can get away with it. We can't. It's just there is a double standard there that right wingers can be simultaneously patriotic and secessionist. For left wingers, it means we're traitors. It's the way of things, and I could spend a whole show, maybe even two shows, explaining why. Point is that we, there is a divide, and I think it began in the 60s. I think it began when the American worker, the real wage income of American workers were probably at their apex in 1968. Since 1971, I believe that the American worker, that is anybody who works manufacturing or what are called blue collar or light blue collar jobs, the average real dollar income has declined steadily since 1971, increased in, I think, only 4 years. 2 years under Clinton and 2 years under Obama. If somebody wants to correct me on that, I believe that's the case. For the most part, the American worker has declined in income. That's part of the reason the recovery of the past 10 years, and it's very unusual for a recovery for the economy to be on a boom cycle. It's not really a boom, but on an upwardly mobile cycle for 10 years, and income still be low. Well, that's part of the reason, is there isn't a lot of buying power of the consumer base. That's something Henry Ford recognized. He was reactionary in all kinds kinds of ways, kind of obsessed with the protocols of the Elders of Zion and a bunch of conspiracy theories. But he understood that in order to sell his durable goods, vehicles, there had to be a quote-unquote middle class capable of making those purchases. And with the development of credit, it became possible. And with the development of credit and a lot of other post-World War II innovations, as Bernie Sanders and Michael Harrington and others like to say, in 1968, a fry cook could have bought a home in just about any part of the country, with a few urban exceptions, a few, you know, Hollywood, San Francisco. Well, no, San Francisco probably could have. But we're a long ways from then. The loans aren't as plentiful. They're even talking about doing away with mortgage interest deduction to make it even harder for people to buy. But it is very hard to buy a home these days if you are young. There are people who have been holding on to homes for quite a long time, and those people have homes if they haven't lost them. But the American working class, which was one in 10 jobs in the United States, pardon me, one in 4 jobs in the United States were manufacturing in the 1970s. Currently, it's one in 10. We can blame that partly on the trade deals that have been negotiated a lot of times by Democrats, pushed by Democrats with a neoliberal agenda. Also, mechanization is an issue. The decline of unions is an issue, and the decline of income. So the working class is suffering, and their pensions that they had earned all those years working are threatened, and that's, you know, considered a big problem for GM, that they've got to make all the payments on these pensions, make good on all these baby boomers that are just sucking them dry, having put money into that pension system, right? I mean, you know, who's sucking who dry? But anyways, since it actually began before the 70s, we had the Civil Rights Act passed, the Voting Rights Act passed. And with that, then President Johnson said, we've lost the South for 100 years. 4 years later, Richard Nixon embraced what was referred to as the Southern Strategy, which was to attract Southern white working class people into the Republican Party. They didn't all go right away. There was lag time, and then Jimmy Carter, a Southerner, ran, and that kind of maintained some of it. But by the 1980s, the vast majority of the Southern states had become what we now term as red states, Republican states. Yes, this was partly racism. It was partly because of a realignment that had began in the 1930s. Black voters had always voted Republican up until the 1930s. The New Deal, they switched, even though the Democratic Party at that point was on average more racist, at least in terms of their voting membership, than the Republican Party. The black vote switched out of economic necessity. They became part of the labor movement, and FDR passed the federal guarantees of being able to organize, and of course you had the New Deal, Social Security, and since then, pretty much every election since 1932, H.L. Mencken was writing about it. He didn't think that the Democrats would get the black vote in 1932. They did get the black vote, and it's increased every time. I think the lowest win rate of the black vote, according to Gallup polling, that the Democrats have had was Kennedy, who got like about 68% or something of that order, because he really wasn't he wasn't considered to be civil rights friendly, partly because of his ties with some of the Dixiecrats and some other reasons. But then once Johnson took over and signed the Civil Rights Act, I think he had something ridiculous, 97% of the vote. Also had a lot to do with his opponent in 1964. Black vote ever since then has been anywhere from 80 to 95% voting for the Democratic Party. The flip side of that is working class white people have gradually been leaving the party. But it's easy to tie that to racism. There also has been the decline of the working class in terms of the loss of the manufacturing jobs, including the decline of income, the ascent of cheaper jobs, fast food, and the like. So, and which is mostly not non-union. And with the loss of the union wage and the loss of union political organization, they have left the party. Really, the first major wave was with Reagan, a little bit back and forth since then. But West Virginia, at one time, because the coal miners were a solid Democratic base, they had the most radical union. They were the only union to strike during World War II when there was a federal injunction against strikes. They were radical. We've had movies based on them, Mate One, that showed that they were actually ideologically very, very left-wing, even with just high school education, sometimes not even that. Last year, I had Nick Smith on to discuss classism. He, of course, is a working class guy in West Virginia. I invited him to talk about classism on the left. But the problem isn't just classism. The problem is that the Democratic Party and progressive movements have adopted causes that have come at odds, at least in terms of perception, with the working class. The environmentalism, of course, is something that hits home locally, stands against logging. Well, you know, we don't have anywhere near the employment we did. You can argue about whether or not that was the environmentalists' fault or whether that was something that was inevitable happening anyways. You can talk about how the fact that most of the local logs being cut are going on to floating mills rather than the few mills that we have left. But the point is that at least from the perception of the cultural perception of particularly the white working class, but possibly growing into the working class as a whole, the left is seen as elitist, and more upper class and less sympathetic. Now, what this has led to, of course, a lot of conflicts in what we call identity politics, because, you know, one of the things that we like to do is talk about the racism. Well, we culminated in the shock of this last election. I was sitting in another radio station studios. The returns were coming in, and Wisconsin. Hillary Clinton had been predicted to win his Wisconsin by an average polls of 6 points. She ended up losing Wisconsin. Even more shocking, she lost Michigan. Less shocking, she lost Pennsylvania and lost Ohio, bigger than they thought. Almost lost Minnesota. This is the Rust Belt. This is Appalachia to the Midwest. This used to be the core of the Democratic Party. These were where the unions were. And people say, well, the unions, we need to reorganize the unions. But you got to have something to unionize before you can organize unions. Part of the reason there are fewer union members is there are fewer typically union jobs left available, again, because of the trade agreements negotiated and signed more often by Democrats than Republicans, and because of mechanization, which is not even being politically addressed, other than by some innovative people in the tech industry, including Mark Zuckerman, who has proposed a base wage rate just for being a human being in the United States. You get $1,000 a month or something like that, and you could have possibly earn it, but you would have a wage that allows you to survive, and we would call it the robot tax. By taking some really innovative ideas, we're going to have to look at that if we can't find something for people to do economically. And as the saying goes, there's almost nothing for male of only a high school education to do. Ironically, there are beginning to be more options in at least in the industries that have been typically occupied by women, clerical, and the rest. So in light of this, we've got. A working class that is declining. The middle class is disappearing in this country. The middle class as we knew it. Maybe there was at a time when we held a position globally and more resources came here, and maybe that's being reoriented, and maybe that's not such a bad thing from a certain point of view. But it's a lot easier for a left coast professional liberal or even socialist to say than it is for somebody who is living in Ohio, who is losing a threat of losing their pension, whose kids are unemployed and who are living a lifestyle that is much more marginal than it was 30 years ago. Now you add that and add to that what inspired the show a few days ago. On August 3rd, 2017, Raw Story, a known liberal online magazine, posts something that gets posted by liberals all around Facebook, people I respect, and I got into an argument with one of them about this article. Title: A Psychological Analysis of Trump Supporters Has Uncovered 5 Key Traits About Them. All right. Bad start. It goes in and talks about, how Trump is politically invincible. And I kind of glance over that until I get to number one, authoritarian personality syndrome. Okay, that basically means they lean towards fascism. So we got that. And they go into their data to support it. 2, social dominance orientation. Basically, people think they're better than other people. We got that. Prejudice. Also, people thinking they're better than other people. Racist. We're calling all Trump supporters racist. 4, intergroup contact. They're isolated, provincial. Okay, message got. And then the last one, relative deprivation. And then, and this is something where the article gets pretty annoying, because it talks about how 538 estimated, about how they're screaming as if they're working class, but they're not really working class, because the median annual income of Trump supporters is $72,000, according to 538. I like to think they meant average, because if they're talking median, that means the absolute highest any voter across the country who voted for Trump is earning is $144,000. That means the Koch brothers didn't vote for him. It means nobody voted for him. I assume they mean average is $72,000. But even when you talk about it being an average, if you exclude the people who vote Republican all the time out of their class interests, and part of my promo, I said the only class conscious class in the United States is the upper class. That's been true for a long time. I'm trying to remember which labor activist wrote this, but he said basically one of the frustrations of trying to organize the American working class is that the average American working class person considers themselves to be a temporarily frustrated millionaire. Well, that, okay. Again, it's something that we're putting them down. You can find this on Raw Story, August 3rd. I read you the title. Yeah, that's how you lose 2018. That's how you lose 2020. That's how you permanently lose the working class. It's one thing that you're no longer representing their interests, that you no longer have their back. But to attack them, and this is not the only article. This is just one of the more obnoxious ones. I mean, this is really... I would say our own kind of provincialism. You want to talk about classism on the left, just keep right on attacking Trump voters. There are reasons people vote for Trump. Not every one of them is racist. Yes, I understand that it means they have to feel comfortable with his racist rhetoric. But the fact of the matter is there are people who voted for Trump, who were ready to vote for Bernie Sanders, by the way, who voted for Trump because Hillary Clinton wasn't even promising changes in policy, a change in the economic structure. At least he was promising it, and there's some indication that a bunch of people voted for Trump just to start a dumpster fire to get attention, to throw a ringer in, to have it maybe the whole thing fall apart. I don't know how many of them voted for that purpose, but definitely they're voting for a change. And you know, when you're under attack, economically, you tend that's when the identity politics and the cultural politics tend to take over, contrary to intuition. The tendency is for them to start identifying. They go cultural. They go and they go social politics. They oppose things like abortion, whereas in other times it wasn't an important part of their. They may oppose abortion, but it wasn't an important part of their voting decision. Maybe that's why they're making such a big argument about TG bathroom usage. In another time, it wasn't quite as heated. And we can say, why is bigotry being ramped up? Well, part of it is because we're talking about, sectors of the population that are under attack economically by economic realities. And the party and the movements that are supposed to have their backs, that are supposed to embrace them, have failed them. That's my basic thesis. I'm going to expand on some individual points, but I want to remind everybody you're listening to KHSU. This is Thursday Night Talk. My name is Eric Kirk. I'm really going to need some callers tonight or my voice will go. But the phone number, if you want to join the conversation, 826-4805. Or 1-800-640-5911. That's 826-4805 or 1-800-640-5911. I'm saying this, and I'm going to give a little bit of a personal background here. My parents, as I've discussed, come from a red diaper family. My grandparents were communists. My parents what would be called recovering communists, kind of like recovering Catholics. There is a definite, working class thread in my family. It's very divided. We have Trump supporters, some of who boycotted my brother's memorial service. He passed away this last spring, over this. There is a huge divide, so I am consciously aware of it. And my father, who is not upper class, he's working class in background, and my brother would refer, I can't say it on the air, but they would refer to the Rust Belt states as dumb effing stand. And that is, a war within kind of the working class. I'm not saying it's all upper class people who take this position and who have a superior attitude, but there's definitely a class element in this. When you look at, what is one of the most liberal cities in the country? San Francisco. What's the median income there, or the average income there? High enough to be able to afford $5,000 a month for rent. All right, Brian in Fortuna, we'll take your call.
Well, hi, Eric.
Hi.
I've been writing a book for quite, excuse me, I'm very short of breath.
Sure.
My heart's given out on me.
Oh,
but
sorry to hear that.
I've really studied a lot on the dynamics, social dynamics of economics,
mm-hmm.
And what people forget is that the rumor that's circulating everywhere right now is that we are in a vanishing waterhole, and that brings out the beast, and it brings out the predator in us, and when the predator comes out, the beast, when it rises, it has no conscience, it delights in cruelty, and anything that it can discern as other than itself is fair game, okay? And almost everything out there is live bait right now. And people they're not engaging in brotherhood anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The separatism in our society is huge right now. And I think there's an effort, I think Bernie tried to appeal to that, but he didn't make it,
No, he didn't.
And it's because Trump appealed to the greed in people. And it doesn't matter whether he lied, whether he's a sexist or a racist or anything. If people felt like they were going to get a bigger piece of the pie because of Trump, because fear is reigning right now. And we're like a school of piranhas, man. Anything that hits the water, we're going to jump on, okay? And even our own kind in some cases, especially with the feeding frenzy, you know? And there's a hysteria, and it takes almost nothing to plug into it. And Trump plugged into that. I don't think
Let me challenge you a little bit on that, though, because we had a declining waterhole situation back in the 1930s, and which was even worse, actually, for most people. And that generated a left-wing movement, a populist left-wing movement, mobilization of working class.
Eric, you know, the thing is that people felt that our resources were infinite back then.
I don't know that they felt that. They were on soup lines, shanty towns across the country. I don't know that they had a feeling one way or another about the resources. What they knew is they were hungry.
The entire earth was not being devoured by corporate interests the way it is now. People feel totally helpless in the face of what's going on with the earth right now. And it's not just global warming. Okay, because even the corporations are engaged in this feeding frenzy, okay? And people know that there's not going to be anything left for them.
I don't know that they're aware of that. You're right that we have finite resources, but I'm not sure the people who are living in the Midwest feel that way. I think they see it as a misallocation of the resources, that they're entitled to them.
I think they're totally in denial. Yeah. I think they all know that Mother Earth is suffering and that natural resources are disappearing, that all of the beauty that you see in this planet right now is in hot water. And most people know that. Whether they think about it consciously or not, it's in the back of their minds. It's like people do not want to hear this. They don't want to talk about it. When I talk about it, I become a pariah. They move away from me on the bus, okay? They don't want to hear it.
Sure.
And it's, you know, if I was just some crazy old coot, they'd laugh at me. But they don't. They get pissed off. And they go off on me. And, I mean, I've really, really done a lot of research on what's going on. And I can tell you that whether people confess to it or not, there is a level of fear. The population level, the way it's going up, housing, you just name it. The seas are polluted. They're full of plastics. And whether people admit it or not, because they love to go right back in denial and stick their heads right back up their butts and try to forget about it, because they need some kind of reason and some kind of future to live in. And they don't have it right now. We know that the earth is being devoured at a pace that's increasing every day. Species are disappearing at an ever-increasing rate. We know that the fish in the ocean, many of them are not just becoming extinct, but they're becoming inedible. You know?
All right. Listen, we got somebody behind you, but you want to close it up?
Right. You know, what I'm going to say is that it's always been that way in some way or another. The earth is finite. It's transitory. Sure. And so are we. We're all expendable. And we've got to manage to love each other in spite of the dynamics of loss.
Thank you very much. So basically,
I'll turn my radio back up.
Thank you. So basically, people are viscerally in tune with, again, what I would call the left coast ideology, which I'm not saying the left coast ideologies are wrong. There is finite. Even Marxism, like capitalism, were premised on infinite resources. We know that they're finite. So the theory here is that everybody's freaking out because, at least viscerally, they're aware that we've reached the end of that. An interesting theory. I'm not sure I agree with it, but let's take Jay in Arcata. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. I want to make 2 points.
Sure.
The first one is a quibble. You were talking about the median income and how if the median income is 72,000, then the top has to be 144 or something.
Right.
No, that isn't true. If you have five people, just a small population, and they make 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, and the top guy makes 5 billion, okay? The middlemost guy is the guy up to 3,000, and it remains the middlemost guy. So the median income is 3,000.
All right, that's it's certainly not a concept mathematically, because median is halfway between top and bottom mathematically. So maybe there's a different usage, but
no,
average. What you're looking at is average.
No, the average is where you just add them all up and then divide by the number of items you have.
Right.
And those are the kind of things that get messed up by extremists. You know, you could have like four working guys and Bill Gates, and let's, you know, put them all together and see what the average income is, and they're all billionaires. But the median income is a measure where you take all the people and line them up in order and take the middlemost one. And that one is less sensitive to extremes, and it's called the median in statistics. Anyway, that's the quibble.
Sounds good.
What I wanted to say was I think your analysis is absolutely correct. That people were sick and tired, you know, working stiffs were sick and tired of being screwed over, and they wanted change. You know, I was a Bernie guy, but I tell you, I got some solace out of the fact that Trump won because Hillary lost. I mean, I was tired of, you know, the people putting up, you know, the inside track folks. I mean, we were all supposed to, you know, be present at and worship at Hillary's coronation, and I, for one, was fed up with it, the whole system, after I saw what happened to Bernie. And I'm not a working class guy. I mean, I have,
sure.
I'm a physician and I have a good income, a guaranteed income. So I understand why they did what they did. And I think Bernie would have been the guy that could have taken on Trump and beaten him, because he would have said, look, you know, I stand for all the things that you stand for or say you stand for, except that I've been doing them and you haven't. You've been taking care of your rich friends, and I suspect you will continue to do so. And he probably could have gotten the support of the working class people, because he was a working class guy himself.
Well, he was getting the working class in the primaries.
Yeah.
He was taking all of the rural states because they were actually coming out to vote for him. And there's a history of that throughout the Midwest. Radicalism.
Sure,
Eugene
know.
Debs came out of Indiana.
Right.
La Follette came out of Wisconsin. I mean, there's a history of radicalism.
Absolutely.
In those areas.
Hopefully, you know, my crystal ball says, I think Trump is going to be gone by 2020. Mm-hmm. And this would be a chance for, you know, Pence to take on Elizabeth Warren. And I think that would be the battle that we need to have.
Well, I don't know. They're talking Kamala Harris, but who knows? So
but someone like Elizabeth, who, I mean, I think the reason Bernie ran was that she didn't or wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
So if we get somebody who is an honest populist, who really does give a damn about the people who work for a living, and who would renegotiate these pacts, and we are totally screwed. We've been screwed for a long time because we don't manufacture stuff. And the three countries in this world that do manufacture, which are Germany, China, who is that third big manufacturer? Korea. I mean, they are just doing magnificently. And we are slowly going down, you know.
Well, I think we also need to look at something else. It'd be great to put. I'd love to see Elizabeth Warren run. I don't know that she actually wants to be president. I don't know that she sees her role as that, but we'll see. But one of the things I want to put to you, I have another thought on this, is that it's not just about who we put up. I think there is a lot going on in the culture. There's a discourse now. We're on social media, and we're discussing things. Anybody in Facebook who's on Facebook should look up a group called Liberals and Conservatives. It's got a lot more people that are not just defined by those definitions, everybody from the left to right to libertarian. But it's a group where there are intense discussions where people are just talking back each other with all the usual insults and the rest.
Uh-huh.
But then there's some discussions where all of a sudden something happens where we're actually talking. We're actually having a conversation about the issues. And I have found that there are working class, this is part of it, Trump supporters who talk like Eugene Debs sometimes, you know, and it's like, you know, so the question is, you know, we don't have a choice. We got to find a way to reach them. We got to find a way to pry that vote back. Running somebody like Bernie, maybe Elizabeth Warren, maybe somebody else or Sherrod Brown, whatever, is a good start. But I think we got to address the way we're talking about it. I think we got to have, you know, not be sending our conservative uncles and cousins our smug, you know, very clever comedians, Colbert and Jon Stewart, they're great. They're great for us. It's catharsis. It's all very clever, but it the effect of it, you know, we need to change the way we're talking to people. I think we need to learn that.
Well, I was around during the Vietnam era, and it was the same sort of thing. You know, the people on the left were saying it was a stupid war and we shouldn't be there, and they would be talking down to the guys who were supporting the war, mm-hmm. which was, in fact, mostly the same people you're talking about right now.
Yes.
And I remember I tried to convince some of my friends that this is a stupid war. I ended up over there for a year. But there was no way to do it unless you got it from their viewpoint and said, you know, well, I don't want to tell you how I would try to argue them, but basically it was like, why are we throwing away our lives? And then maybe they could understand that. But if you put it in terms of, you know, you're stupid, you know, they've been revolting like this since Ho Chi Minh was, you know, whatever, you wouldn't get anywhere. And you have to speak their language. And you don't do that by, like you say, by talking down to them and denigrating them by saying that they're fascists and they're racist and this right. and that. I mean, they're people who are hurting, who've been left out of the economy, and I think we have to understand that and be sympathetic. And again, we almost got it because Bernie understood them. Bernie was going to take care of this situation. But instead, you know, the party hacks with their thumbs on the scale made sure that Hillary got the nod.
Yeah, well, there were some other problems, too. I mean, Bernie also did not find the formula to get people of color, particularly the older black vote, voting for him. And, you know, there's a lot.
But the Clintons had that. I mean, you know, Bill Clinton had the black vote in his pocket for a long time.
Yeah, I know. Bernie wasn't going to get it. He should have, I thought, been down in the Deep South a lot sooner than he was. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if that would have made a difference, right?
But the dynamic is still the same. Yeah. I mean, these people are looking for somebody. But, you know, in a couple of years, I realize that Trump is not their guy. He's not going to get anything for them. He's now talking about, you know, the tax breaks, which were originally going to be all for the middle class, and now maybe not all for the middle class, and, you know, maybe rich people have to bring up the economy. I hope, by 2020, they'll realize they were sold the pig in the poke, mm-hmm. and they'll look for some other alternative. And if we have somebody there, then I think the Democrats will win. And if they don't...
All right, Jay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. You did a great job.
All right. George in Eureka, you're on the air.
Hello. I just wanted to geek out on the statistics there for a moment.
Sure.
The everything you said about the average and the median were fine. What you were saying at the beginning, the thing halfway between the lowest one and the highest one.
Yes.
That's called the midpoint.
Okay. All right. I stand corrected.
And then there's also the mode, but we won't go there. So.
All right. So the median is, as he said, it's the middle. Yeah.
When you put them all down in order and pick the middle one.
Gotcha. All right. I appreciate that. Do you have any other comments?
No, great discussion, actually.
Okay.
I just couldn't let that one go by.
All right, George, thank you.
Some statistics professor should have called you, not me, but hey.
All right. Okay. I stand corrected. Let us no, median does not mean midpoint. Those are two different concepts.
Bingo.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
All right. Anybody else want to join? You're listening to KHSU. This is Thursday Night Talk. My topic tonight, are class politics dead in America? Actually, we're not. You know, they're not dead. That is hyperbole on my part. But the phone number, if you want to talk with me about it, is 826-4805 if you are local. Or if you're out of the area, 1-800-640-5911. That's 826-4805 or 800-640-5911. If you didn't get those numbers, they are online, khsu.org. I really do think the Democrats and progressives in general has to find a way to reach the working class. I think the last real working class campaign was Mondale, unfortunately, and everybody saw that as a disaster. After that, it was John Edwards, really, that really dealt with class labor issues in a concrete way. But then he wigged out with his affairs and stuff. And then after that, really, it's Bernie Sanders. And we can talk a little bit about Sanders. We've talked about it before. But I'm going to take John in Scotia. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going, Eric?
Oh, going pretty good.
Good program. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
I just want to plug into all this the reality of what General and President MacArthur, not MacArthur, Eisenhower, was talking about when he said, beware the military-industrial complex.
Yes.
You put that in the mix.
He fired MacArthur.
Unsolved as it is now, we're making huge money off of adventuring around the world and all that goes with it. And that just confuses the heck out of everything else that's going on or not going on, as the case may be.
It's true. But that also is a constant. That's been the case since World War II and possibly even before World War II. I had a show dedicated one time, is there any military action you have or would support since World War II that the United States has made? And nobody could come up with any. I mean, it was, they all seemed to be pretty bad that way. But in a world of declining resources, yeah.
Or resources that are managed by large corporations, when you have a constant increase in your military-industrial spending, it's a bad deal.
But, you know, again, there was the divide. Now, we haven't gotten into all the history.
I don't argue with the theory of warfare and that. You know, right. I don't argue with that, but it's got so big.
Yeah. You had the old left and the new left. The new left was perceived as being more class upwardly mobile than the old left. But part of it, and remember Phil Oakes singing, I ain't going to march anymore. He says, you'll hear labor screaming when they close the missile plant. Definitely the new left had the position that we needed to reduce the industrial military complex. A lot of people in the working class say, that's my job. You know, and how do we address that? Well, you know, there's other things we can be doing with those resources, obviously. It can be making something else, but you know that's what we have to address. So, all right, listen, I'm going to give the phone number again, 826-4805 or 800-640-5911. And Jay, you had something else you wanted to add.
Yeah, I'm tearing my hair out here. I think it's fine for us to have our own opinions, but we've got to agree on facts. The median number, just Google it. It'll tell you. You line the numbers up in order, and you pick the middlemost one. That is what the median is.
Didn't the caller after you say that?
No.
Oh, what did he say?
I don't know. I think he said it was the median.
He said I was referring to the midpoint.
Yeah, but the midpoint is the median. That's what the term means.
Oh, okay. He seemed to think that midpoint and median were two different things.
Yeah, no. I don't want to make too big an issue, but I think we lose our credibility when we sort of just throw terms around.
Right. I agree. I blew it with median, and sounds like I doubled down on
it. Now we all know what it is, and I'll shut up. All right. Thanks.
Okay. Bye. All right. Again, phone number 826-4805 or 800-640-5911. We are talking about class politics in the United States and statistics tonight. Scott, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks. Yeah, I wanted to address the fact that for several decades now, it seems, more than half of the actual voting populace that can vote doesn't vote at all, Democrat and Republican alike, independent alike, and that I find troubling.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when it comes to talking about how to change the situation, you mentioned social media. However, still a majority, I feel, this is not, I'm not taking any kind of a statistic from any kind of thing I've read, but I feel that a lot of them still get their information from the mainstream media. For example, in the last election cycle, Trump was almost everywhere, whether he was being denigrated or just photo op or whatever. Well, populists like Bernie Sanders famously got cut out of even being shown on TV, and instead, I think it was CNN or someone showed a blank podium awaiting Trump to come and give a speech after one of the primaries, for example. So.
Yeah, the media coverage is there, although CNN is on the decline, as are all cable news. People are not watching. People under 60 don't watch television anymore. They're online, and online, it's a wide open as to what you can get. You got a lot of what are called fake news sites. It's a term that's actually misunderstood. Now, there are people who just come up with headlines for clickbait. That's fake news. It's not false propaganda, but it's come to mean that. you know, there are a lot of good sites and there are a lot of bad sites, and how to sort through it. Well, you know.
Yeah, and the whole term about fake news, you know, going back to what fake news used to be called yellow journalism.
Well, no, the term.
The Gulf of Tonkin incident that got us into Vietnam or escalated Vietnam. Sure. There have been propaganda. Like right now, personally, I feel a lot of news outlets are generating a propaganda to instigate a war with Russia over a variety of things. But if you look at reality, Russia itself, the country is surrounded by I don't know how many untold bases by the U.S. and has not invaded a quote-unquote foreign country for quite a while, unlike the United States, since the end of World War II. So
we're not going to go to war with Russia. Nobody's going to do that. That would be stupid. That would be suicidal. We're not going to go to war with Russia. There are people who benefit from the tension, the Cold War with Russia, but we are not going to go to war with Russia.
But still, you know, that's still diverting the attention away from what's really going on with us, and that is actually servicing the military-industrial complex of having to generate this fear, this boogeyman that we have to prepare ourselves against, and therefore still lining the pockets of these militarists.
That has been, you know, it's been written about since back to Marx, even before that. The ruling class benefits from jingoism and the war call because it's a distraction from the class interests or from whatever particular issues. We know that, and it's out there, and that's not going to change. But there are forms of media that are there that are available that are pretty good. Others that are less so. How you get people to read the good ones and discern away from the bad ones, I don't know the answer to that. But the internet presents some opportunities, but it also presents a whole lot more clutter. And again, the term fake news came from sites that actually drafted up just completely BS news that they just made up so that you click on them and they earn money by getting your clicks. And it's a whole industry now. That's where it was originally from. It has come in this past campaign to mean fake, false propaganda. That's a totally different concept. But anyway, thank you very much, John. Is Scott on line wanting to come back? Oh, okay. Well, first I was asked to give out the number again. Phone number 826-480-5, 1-800-640-5911. My name is Eric Kirk. We are talking about class politics tonight. Are they dead? Can progressives reclaim class politics? Phone number again, 826-4805 or 800-640-5911. One of the issues that I get into when discussing this is the fact of the matter is that there is a lot of racism in this country. There is a lot of sexism in this country, LGBT phobia, and it's an open question as to whether or not white working class people are more racist, more sexist, more LGBT phobic than anyone else, but definitely it manifests itself in ways that are very destructive, and certainly Donald Trump has played into that. And so the point is not to set that aside, not to say we need to disregard that, we need to not call people on their racism. That's not the point. The point is if it's done in a way that makes it look like they're the problem and you're not, you know, if you're a white left coast kind of person, you need to talk about it as our problem within the white community. You can actually make some ground on that. But if you call them a racist in a self-righteous way, you will lose them because you're talking racism, you're talking sexism. What they're hearing is white trash. We need to learn how to talk about that. But in the meantime, Mike in Eureka, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you this evening?
Doing well.
Good. I've been listening, and except maybe when I was coming downstairs, I haven't heard anybody talking about unions.
A little bit at the beginning, but you know, the basic point is that the movement is declining, and people are talking about we need to revive it. But in order to revive the union movement, you got to revive jobs to be unionized. And as we talked about, the manufacturing jobs used to be 25%, now it's 10% of the jobs in the country and declining. But we're trying to unionize areas that haven't been traditionally unionized. But yes, that's what we need.
I mean, when the middle class was built was the 50s and the 60s when the unions were strong.
Yeah.
Well, starting people with the seem 30s, to ignore maybe. That. You know, and there was the community of labor actually seemed to accept everybody. You didn't hear a lot of racist stuff going on in unions. There was much more a feeling of, you know, brotherhood. That's why they called each other brother. And sister.
There was a famous strike against GM in which the company brought in black African American people to scab to break the strike, and right. They ended up joining the strike. It was a great moment. It was actually depicted. They kind of merged events in Mate One. They actually didn't bring in black and Italian coal miners to break that strike. What John Sayles did was he combined. I really strongly recommend the movie Mate One. It's sort of like combining the two events. But yes, the union movement for a long time managed to at least minimize the impact of racism, which was used and continues to be used. And today, of course, what is used to is the scapegoat of the Latino worker who has crossed the border and has been living here. And that is the new scapegoat.
Well, in my personal opinion, the breaking of unions was actually done by the capitalist structure. They wanted to get rid of the unions, and they used the fact that unions were communists, and communist was the big scare word. You know, this morning I was listening to NPR, and they were talking about having enough nerve to ask for a raise. How many people don't have
the nerve?
I heard
that story, yeah.
Yeah, but they never mentioned the fact that when you had a union, you did not have to go in there by yourself and beg and plead. You know, you had a contract. People yeah. don't have any kind of contracts. They, you know, change jobs like crazy.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned Meituan. Another one is the Longshore Union right here on the West Coast.
Yeah, they got, that mechanism did that one in.
Well, no, not really. They still shut down the coast when it has, you know, meaning. I mean, during the Iraq War, they tried to get other unions to join, but they shut down the entire West Coast for a day.
Yeah.
Something like that, when it happens, does cost the economy about $2 billion in one day, you know, because things are not moving. And, you know, this country is now so dependent on things arriving immediately. It's all on trains and this kind of stuff for the manufacturing companies. But Ronald Reagan really put the kibosh on unions when he did the flight controls.
The biggest mistake the unions
made was not to immediately do a general strike across this country.
On top of it, the Teamsters endorsed him in 1984. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, things like that, you know, they were totally out of line. They really were totally out of line. But they were also becoming very dependent on, you know, the union kind of a thing where they were taking money and not real representation. You know,
all right.
The truck drivers were coming and going, and there was a lot of outfits.
You definitely got the point. We're kind of getting to the top of the hour here. I want to get some people in behind you. The trucking industry may be replaced by completely driverless trucks soon, but we'll talk about that another time. John in Bayside, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah,
you bet.
I can add a little something about the unions because I had an opportunity during this election season to talk to multiple generations of union electricians. Mm-hmm. And these are lifelong Democrats. One of their disenchantments with the Democratic Party at this point is the race-based agenda that's being driven. And when you refer to racism and you center it on the white working class, it's just unfair. I mean, the most racist-driven agenda that I've heard in my life to this point was the Democratic Party during this election cycle. I mean, it was driven the last two election cycles of the Obama administration, and it is at a fever pitch. Everything's about race. Every aspect of our lives is being analyzed down to a racial aspect.
So you're saying that identity politics have taken such a centerpiece out to the Democrats that they've lost.
At its essence, it is truly racist. It's a proxy for a racist agenda that is anti-white. I mean, and that is what the working class is feeling. I mean, it is being jammed down their throat that they are racist. And really, it's just being used as the mechanism to try to rally a voting base.
All right, I thank you for calling because I really appreciate it, because I don't agree with you entirely, but I agree with the general tenet that by attacking them on that basis, you're basically talking one thing and they're hearing white trash, and I do agree.
Well,
with that.
No. How can it be that folks that are using race as every aspect of their argument? How is that not racist?
Because I don't think that's the case. I think that's a straw man. But I know that's the perception.
I'll give you an example. I've been listening to KHSU, Thursday Night Talk, mm-hmm. for over 20 years. And in the last five, we'll say in the last eight, there has been a complete shift in the type of resistance. It's in this community. It's gone from an environmental resistance, an environmental awareness in the community, to this race-based resistance within the community. And
we're getting to the top of the hour. Could I would like to actually talk to you about it, because I want to do a follow-up show on this.
Yeah, it would be wonderful.
Could you contact me? I'm going to give out my email address. Anybody can contact me on this. It's ericvkirk@gmail.com, because I really want to talk to you about this. It's a discussion that needs to be had. But we only have 4 minutes left, and I got a couple people behind you.
Yeah, I appreciate you taking my time tonight, and I will definitely be in touch with you, because I would like to hear this conversation. So
thank you. Thank you. Yep. All right, Mishka in the car.
Hey, Eric, can you hear me all right?
We can hear you, yes.
Okay, cool. Well, I think that the whole thing is really, it's not a level playing field out there amongst trying to get at these people who the left may have lost because of the money that's involved in politics. It is not, so anybody who gets elected has to have a huge war chest, and you get that money by appealing to the aims and the goals of the richest people.
Yeah, but Hillary Clinton had took in a lot more money than Trump did. Trump didn't need so much money to win. He just got media, right. Constant media coverage. He got it free.
But still, that money is there, and it's the people like the Koch brothers, whatever, feeding the
I agree with you, Mishka, but Koch brothers, of all the campaigns they finance, they've like won 1 in 10. They have lost it. And the reason is, and we don't have time for this, I don't think the money makes as big a difference anymore, because television advertising doesn't make a big difference anymore. But I do agree with you in principle, and then that's how politicians react. But we're getting right to the top, and I'm going to try to take one more call. Thanks, Mishka.
Great.
All right, Sterling, you're going to be my last caller. I know people are calling in. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
The point I like to make is that...
We lost Sterling. All right. We have one more person, we'll go ahead and put you straight on. I don't know your name. If you can introduce your name, Katie will put you on. Can you give us your name, sir, or ma'am?
Yeah, my name's Jake.
Hi, Jake. Oh, hi, Jake.
Hey, how's it going, Eric? Hey, I just got to respond to the caller before who was making the argument that he's overly concerned that people are discussing race as an issue. Race has been an issue since the start of this country. It's not going away. And just because we had our first African-American president who was elected in the landslide elections twice and was a successful president for 8 years, now we have a president who clearly is quite unsuccessful. I just find it interesting that, you know, white guys are calling radio shows all over the country and they always bring up the race issue. White men who like to bring up the race issue.
I agree, Jake, but let me ask you something really quick because we only have a little over a minute left, because I'm going to put out something that I'm going to argue. I don't think we should tell a working class person who is unemployed, whose kids are being busted for meth and who's losing their house, that they are privileged. Even if it's true, I think we need to abandon that language for that discussion. That's what do you think? And you've got about 30 seconds to respond.
I think the demographics clearly are the future, and the future is fewer and fewer white men deciding the political realities in America. In fact, white men are a smaller and smaller percentage of the voting public every year. So that's what's going to happen in the future. It's time to accept that fact, white guys. You're not going to be in control forever.
Yeah, but these people are not in control of anything. They're not even in control of their lives, some of them, right now. They are in communities throughout the Rust Belt that are just going under. They're hurting.
I think you're going to have a hard time making that case to African Americans, to Latino Americans, to Asian Americans, to women, that we need to feel sorry for white men. That's going to be a real hard sell.
It is going to be a hard sell, but that's why we lost this last election. But
Hillary won by 3 million votes, by 2 percentage points. Yeah. It's the electoral college, that's the problem. That's what we need to get rid of.